It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, we are living that dream and taking you with us. Good morning, everybody. It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. And you can watch us live on Twitch television. Aaron, tell them how to get on Twitch TV. I don't even know how to do
Twitch.tv/1013TheGame.
There it is. Check out my new sweatshirt, my new salmon-colored sweatshirt my wife got for me.
I thought that looked fresh and clean.
And speaking of fresh and clean, look who's back to my right. Our good friend from the Burlington Free Press and my co-host, Austin Danforth. Good morning.
I got dressed up just for this. You got the haircut.
You look sharp today, man.
Thank you.
You look very sharp today.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. You know, it was so good to see you. I hadn't seen you in weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of weeks. And, you know, in the semifinals, I was blessed enough to have my team in. I looked to my left, and there you are in all his glory.
Yeah.
Doing all the work for the Free Press. It was great to see you.
Hey, good to see you, too. We were overdue.
802-655-6672 is the number to call. 802-655-6672. Or you can text us in the Town Fair Tire text line at the exact same number, 802-655-6672. Good morning, Aaron Wells, our crack producer. Good morning, my man.
Good morning. How you doing?
It's great to see you this morning as well.
Yep.
I like your sweatshirt as well there. You got a little Steve Carell at the office.
Yep, office quote.
Yep, a lot of good stuff happening here today.
It's Michael from the office saying, I'm not superstitious, but I'm a little stitious.
I'm a little stitious, and I feel the exact same way. The exact same way. I can't even tell you the things that I end up doing in my life with things just to make sure that.
I think if you're not a little stitious, you're actively tempting fate.
Good for you for not being stitious, though. To be a little stitious or superstitious. If you're not superstitious, good for you, because it's annoying for me to be as superstitious as I am. Frustrating. I don't know if I told you, our first game of the season, I took a long trip to Colchester. You know, we were opening up against South Burlington. Congratulations to them, the girls' champions
this year.
And we actually beat them first game of the year 2-1. But long story short, I decided to take a long way to Colchester. So I go from my house in Williston. I drive into, how did I get there? I went through Winooski to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Took a long trip. And as I'm going through Winooski, as I'm about to cross into Colchester, a black cat runs across in front of my car. As I'm going to my first game of the season, and I am thinking to myself, oh my God. And I'm not lying to you. I mean, the whole trip there, I'm thinking, what do I do? How do you shake this? And I'm freaking out. Like, why did you go this way, you moron? First of all, you added 10 minutes to your trip. You didn't have to do it. And now a black cat out of nowhere, a black cat. I mean, you don't see a lot of black cats. All this black cat runs in front of the car. I mean, luckily I didn't hit the cat. But, you know, I see the cat coming, and I'm thinking, man, do I have to hit the gas, like, just to make sure I beat this cat? But, of course, the animal lover that I am, I didn't want to risk the fact that I might strike the cat. So I slow down, and sure enough, you know, he looks at me and goes right across, and I'm thinking, here we go. Here we go. This is the way my day's going to start. We got to go play South. But, yeah, you know, so anyway. But then that worked out for us because we ended up winning that game. So maybe.
Did you find yourself going back that way?
No, I haven't done, not a chance.
Okay.
Maybe
that's the problem. Maybe you didn't do the stitiousness right.
If you
got to repeat the process.
I'm not tempting fate on that, Austin.
I had it like when I was younger. If I was watching Michigan football, which was basically one of my two or three favorite teams, I would like if we were winning, I would not move from the position.
Preach.
If we started playing poorly, I had to move positions.
Oh, yeah.
If like it happened one time, I found myself like because things were going well, the other team scored. Might have been Michigan State. I forget. It definitely wasn't Ohio State. I wouldn't have done this for Ohio State.
Right.
But I found myself like absentmindedly like humming or like tapping to the other team's fight song.
Yeah.
The game turned. I've sat stone-faced for every opposing fight song ever since.
I will tell you that I've done so many things like that. I can tell you the last Giants Super Bowl, which was 2012, beating the Patriots, during the playoffs. Because I have so much nervous energy in the playoffs, in between games and commercials during the commercials, I had a little bench press in my basement. I was bench pressing. That's what I kept doing. I kept bench pressing. So as they're winning, so this whole time, I'm bench pressing for the whole playoff time in between commercials. And then on top of that, during the NFC Championship game, which the Giants played San Francisco, my wife was on a trip to Hawaii with some friends of hers. And prior to her leaving, she had worn this Eli Manning jersey. I probably told this story before. She had worn this Eli Manning. I made her wear this Eli Manning jersey every Sunday, and the Giants kept winning these games. So I told her, I said, Monica, I'm telling you right now, do not ruin this for me. When she was in, so she literally, I made her wear, and she sent me pictures every hour. She's on the beach in Hawaii with her friends, and not, you know, she's got her bathing suit on, but over the bathing suit is this, is one of my Eli Manning jerseys that, like, down to her
ankles.
It's
like a nightgown.
It is, and I don't, and she probably didn't wear it the whole time that she was there, but you make sure, thank God she did it, because they ended up winning the Super Bowl.
I logically am not a superstitious person, but emotionally I've caught myself starting to become more and more superstitious the older I get. Like, I noticed I knock on wood a lot when I say something and I realize I'm jinxing myself. And then I've started, when my sister goes up to serve in volleyball, I've started crossing my arms, crossing my legs, and crossing fingers and toes.
Whoa.
So you're not, what are you talking about? You're
holding that position
until
she
serves. For the record, you're not a little superstitious. You're very super. You're superstitious.
And, like, I know logically it doesn't work, but it soothes me to do these things.
Why don't you start doing that in this show so we have good shows? Can you start doing that?
I want to get back to your black cat real quickly, because yes. I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I'm in no way, shape, or form advocating, you know, endangering animals.
Yeah.
But what is, like, if you had hit the cat, would you cancel out the bad luck because it hadn't actually crossed your path?
Oh, I would have felt terrible,
though. You stopped it in its path? Like,
I don't know how that works. Well, the thing is, when it comes
to— Does that cancel it out?
And I asked this question the next week on the air, because I know when you drop salt, if you throw it over, you throw it over your right shoulder, your left shoulder, throw it over all of them, whatever, that's supposed to take care of it. But if your cat crosses in front of you, do you have to go adopt one or something? Like, how do you lose the bad luck? I mean, you know what I mean? I'm just asking the question, but maybe that's for another time.
I don't know.
Anyway.
It's for experts greater than us.
Yeah, much bigger than us. All right, show rundown today, guys. We got a great show headed for you today. Next segment, we're going to talk to Patricia Traynor. She's a New York Giants insider. Listen, I'm telling you right now, the Giants are in the playoffs as we speak right now. They got a big game with Philadelphia tomorrow. We're going to talk about the Giants with Patricia Traynor. And then we've got Rich Alercio. He's the head football coach at St. Johnsbury Academy. I don't know if you guys remember, folks, but about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, right before the football season started, we called Coach Alercio and had him on to talk about the 7v7 yep. in the football league. He had a great spin on it, and he was excited about the season. It's going to be fun to tie a bow on the season, Austin, and talk to him about what he saw, how he felt it went, and what he thinks the future is for football in the state of Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to that.
I'm curious to how he thinks, what he gleaned from the season as well.
Yeah, and we're going to have our Week 10 picks. We have Hot or Not out in left field. But before we do that, I do want to talk about the 2020 fall sports season in Vermont is over with. Austin, you and Alex obviously covered it closely. We only have about 10 minutes on this segment left, but let's kind of get into and kind of the breakdowns. Let's start with girls soccer. Obviously, we know that the CVU had some unbelievable run, came up against a very talented South Burlington High School team, and South Burlington wins the state championship last weekend, beating a team in CVU that some would say is the greatest high school team ever put together.
I think it was on the short list. I think indisputably on that short list. You think about how they handled, like, I think as far as teams I've seen, they're right up there with Stan Williams' first team that famously outscored its opponents 72-1 and gave up zero goals in the run play. I think they were as good as that team. But they'd won 61 games in a row, and, you know, they had the chance to be the only team to win every game they ever played. And instead, they're the only team to win every game but the last game they played. South Burlington had I thought going into the season, they were one of the two teams that might challenge them. I thought they had the pieces that, you know, could like do to CBU what CBU does to everybody else. They could possess. They could play technically, and they went out. They had a freshman, the same kid that, you know, stunned you guys in double overtime.
Yep.
Went out and did it with 5 minutes to go in regulation against the three-time defending champs. It was really impressive, and you can think. I mean, I was trying to think about as far as like Division I girls soccer. If there, like, when was the last? If there was a last female coach to lead a team to a Division I girls soccer championship, Lindsay Austin Hawley, the South Burlington coach, in her first season, might be the first. I'm trying to think, and I don't know. I can't think of
what you're asking in her first. You mean
if no? If there's been a female,
oh, a Burton.
Oh, Suzanne Mears. Yeah, yep, Suzanne that's Mears. Right. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
She beat us. They beat us in double overtime.
It was so recent. I'd overlooked it. Yes, yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah. But really impressive. I mean, first season, let alone, you know, at all. Like that was what South Burlington had to do, and the way they played, they played CVU like CVU plays everybody else, and they beat them at their own game.
And you got to take advantage of your opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, when, it's exactly what they,
To win big games in the playoffs, you have to score, and you have to give yourself. And when you have your opportunities against CVU, we all know that you don't get you don't get a lot of opportunities. So when the opportunity arises, and you give them a ton of credit for how they did, but again, a huge props to the program at CVU, Stan Williams and his girls. I mean, to do what they've done in a conference that they play in, and having the bullseye on the back like they routinely do. I mean, we all know. I mean, it's you know, most of us are, you know, you look and see when you're going to play them, and you're going to get everybody's best usually every time. It's a feather in their cap, and they have nothing to hold their head down by. But congratulations to South Burlington, a worthy champion, and it was a great girls soccer season, especially the Division I. But let's talk a little Division II.
Yeah, Division II, you had U32 winning their very first championship ever. They'd been to the title game three times before, hadn't won any of them. All of them were against Milton,
yep,
which is sort of the queens of D2. They beat defending champ Rice, who had been playing very well, beat him. It finished 2-1 there at South Burlington. U32 has one of the best players in the state in Caroline Kirby,
very
their attacking midfielder. Really just havoc for defenders. Division III, this might have been the best story, like perhaps the best story of the postseason. 10th seeded Stowe won the Division III state championship. They won two regular season games. They only scored in two regular season games, which are the ones that they won. They turn around, they went 4-0 in the playoffs to finish 6-6. And really, to say anybody other than them saw them coming is really like that. I'd give that person a hairy eyeball.
And that tells you what makes the game of soccer so special to me. I mean, you know, you can be, you know, you may not have the best talent on the field and you may not be matched up. It may not be this, but if you find a way to keep people out and you take advantage of your opportunities, you got a chance to win every match. It's hard to score goals. And a tip to the cap to Stowe as well. Let's move over to the boys' side. BHS and Essex. The CVU Essex semifinal was right before our semifinal with South Burlington, and I got there for the winning goal in an unbelievably windy game. And that field,
oh, crazy.
The game that night was crazy with the way the wind was moving. But Essex puts a great finish against a very talented CVU team, and then they play Burlington. Looks like they win the championship, Austin, for a second. Offside call takes it down, and then Burlington finds a way to get it done.
That was as brutal a turn of events as I've seen in a while. You know, scoreless through 80 minutes, goes into OT. Essex, they appear to have scored on a header off a throw-in. The actual call was a foul in the box made by the assistant referee on the far side of the field.
Oh, boy.
And I've seen multiple video angles. I've seen imagery. He called a shove in the back on an Essex player in the box before the goal was scored as a Burlington defender went up to try and clear it with the header. I don't see extended arms or a shove from that player in any of the angles. It wasn't an offsides call. And to have, like, the Essex team erupted. They thought they'd won it. It looked like they did. The team, the bench emptied. Everybody celebrated. To have that waved off, I felt immediately like, I don't know how you respond from that without, like, a five-minute cooling down period.
Yeah.
3 minutes later, Burlington goes the other way, scores on a spectacular cross and volley, and sets off a wild celebration. Burlington was already, the city was in various stages of reaction on Saturday, and that just, I think, bubbled up even more there at BHS. Really, like, enthralling game, but I really feel for the Essex players and coaches and fans who it really did look like they won it. And to have that call
be what,
you know, denies them that was
that's tough.
Really
and, you know,
tough.
And, you know, and you never take for granted how many times you get to a state championship game and to have something taken like that. I mean, again, I didn't see that. I saw it from a distance. Some people have put it on social media. Tough way to lose, but congratulations to Fran DeMasi and his guys.
Oh, they're good. They're good team. Both teams were worthy.
Both worthy. Just difficult to lose a match like that. Okay, let's go to some of the subdivisions.
Yeah, Montpelier, they won their first championship in D2 since 1996. Their star defender, Leo Ribby-Williams, who's also a standout basketball player, He scored really late in regulation to beat Milton, deny Milton, who had looked like arguably the best team in Division II all year.
Yeah, undefeated most of the season.
Undefeated, right? Yep. They denied them the championship. Division III, Peoples, you know, they had their own sort of run and actually had the first female coach to lead a Vermont team to a boys' state championship. Angie Ferraci, I believe it's Ferraci or Ferraci. I apologize for the mispronunciation.
No, I saw that.
Alex wrote that story earlier this week, sort of follow up on Championship Saturday. They denied the defending champ Green Mountain in the D3 final. And then D4, we overlooked Proctor Girls.
Yeah, Proctor
they
Girls won
in D4 Girls
again.
Soccer. Again, it's been their decade there.
Yep.
And in Boys Division 4, the Proctor Boys lost to Twin Valley in penalty kicks.
Oof.
So that was the way I believe that day started in D4 down in Manchester. And I think it was a repeat for Twin Valley. Proctor, they had a chance to go and nose ahead of CVU for the most boys soccer state championships in all divisions. That would have been their 20th. Instead, they're stuck on 19.
And then, obviously, we only have a couple minutes left, but a great season in field hockey,
yep.
Great season in cross country. Volleyball was unbelievable. They got a playoff and got a situation. So really good stuff this year in Division 1, 2, 3, and 4 in Vermont for fall sports. And hopefully we keep our fingers crossed that the situation we're in right now with COVID that will kind of subside so the kids can play in the winter. Real quick, let's get to the Green City Garage poll question. Green City Garage located at 49B Commerce Ave, number 5 in South Burlington, 802-651-9299. Tell my buddy Chris Wallace in Green City Garage that I sent you and Sports Saturday sent you as we are getting ready for winter. You got to get your car ready, Austin. Make sure it's ready for the long trips you got to drive.
Yep.
Anyway, the question today is go to Twitter at 101.3 The Game and answer this for us. Are you watching the Masters this weekend? Yes, no, or maybe?
Yes.
Yes, me too. And before I left, I don't know what it is. I'm trying to. Oh, the TV is on. Before I came out here today, I was prepping for the show, and Tiger like dropped in like a 20-footer to get himself to 5-under. Come on, Tiger. I want you to be in that final round on Sunday. Anyway, quick break. When we come back, we talk about the New York football Giants with our great Giants insider, Patricia Traynor. Don't go anywhere.
The high school coach and the high school reporter who comments on that coach. How do they do a show together? It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
Good morning. It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game. I'm your host, Jeff Paul. My guy, Austin Danforth, is back.
I'm back.
Back in the big seat and, as of course, the best producer in the biz, Aaron Wells.
Yeah, how about that? I got you guys the Masters.
You got the TV on. I love it. Well done.
Working the magic.
That's good stuff. Here I was talking about it like we can't watch it, and I look up 5 seconds later, and there it is. Well, first of all, bad communication with not telling me the TV's on. I mean, first of all, I'm here over here working, trying to get all this thing. I got computers going in front of my phone. I got all these papers, and you're not even telling me it's on.
It had very briefly been on when I was actually still trying to figure out I was on the right channel.
Don't try to justify it.
Okay? I wasn't sure if it was the right channel.
Don't try to justify the fact that the communication again between you and me. Okay, not good. But luckily, we've got a guest now that will take away my attention from me, you know, mocking you in front of Chittenden County. Anyway, joining us now, I'm just kidding, of course. Joining us now in the TikTok Jewelers guest line here on 101.3 The Game and Sports Saturday is our good friend, New York Giants insider, Patricia Traynor. Good morning, Trisha. Patricia, how you doing today?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
It's great to have you on. Hey, listen, I know the record isn't ideal, but the New York Giants are really playing for something tomorrow. I mean, as a Giants fan myself, I'm pretty excited. Patricia, the team's got to feel pretty good about where they're at least in the division right now.
Yeah, you know, they've been taking it one day at a time, one game at a time, and they're starting to stack up that improvement. And here we are, that tomorrow's game, if the Giants somehow manage to win it, they will be tied for first place in the NFC East. And when was the last time the Giants have been playing meaningful football this late in the year? It's been a while, so definitely, you know, reason to be, you know, to be smiling these days if you're a Giants fan, even though the record, as you said, isn't the greatest.
But you feel like looking at them that they're close. I mean, they've lost games late, and that sometimes that comes with young teams. You know, we know what happened in Philadelphia a few weeks ago, the Dallas game in Dallas. You look at what happened with Tampa Bay a couple weeks ago. So to me, this football team is improving. What are you seeing? You're around them all the time. The Joe Judge thing, I think, is going to be a good thing in the Meadowlands.
Yeah, absolutely. I love what Joe Judge has done. I love what this coaching staff has done. I mean, this coaching staff is probably one of the best they've had since the Tom Coughlin days. And not just are they all teachers, but Coughlin always used to have a saying that when the team won, it was the players. When the team lost, it was on him and the coaches. And that's a saying that this group of coaches has adapted, you know, and a good example of that this past week, Patrick Graham was talking about how in the first Philly game, he was seen sitting on the bench with his head in his hands. And, you know, he was asked about that. And he actually got quite emotional with his response. He said, you know, I didn't do enough to put my guys in the right position to win, and I let them down. I'm a teacher, and when my students don't succeed, that's on me. And it was just, you know, it was a very, very telling moment. And I think it just, you know, underscores what this coaching staff is all about and how they've gotten through to these players.
You know, I want to talk about Daniel Jones a little bit, and I'm glad I have you on because you're around this team. You're a New York sports writer, and you're around these guys. When I watch Daniel Jones play, I see how special he's going to be. And I know that there's a lot of turnovers, and I get that, and he's had some turnovers and some bad situations, but I think I don't look at him as a guy that's not going to be elite. But I will tell you, I don't know if I can remember a big-time athlete in New York that takes the heat from the media in New York like Daniel Jones does. I don't know what these guys are watching in terms of what he's been doing. I mean, I understand some of the turnovers have been tough, but they're a kid trying to make plays again with an offensive line at times that can't protect him. And there have been some batted balls, and there have been some situations. But to me, Patricia, this guy looks like the real deal. And I've been saying it for a whole year now. I think he is the best quarterback, and this may not be saying much, but he's the best quarterback in that division. And when I look at him overall, I feel like he's a top 5 or 6 quarterback in the next couple of years if he's able to be protected.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's a good point. And, you know, you look at what Daniel has. In the beginning, let's go back to the beginning, okay? He lost Saquon Barkley earlier this year. He doesn't really have a legitimate number one receiver. I mean, Darius Slayton's probably the closest thing he has to that. You know, his tight end has been inconsistent. He's been playing behind an offensive line that they've been trying to figure out that has gone through some growing pains. It's starting to settle down now, but, you know, through all that, Daniel has hung tough in the pocket. He's, you know, has he made some mistakes and rushed some things? Yes, but he's learning. He's settling down, and people don't take note of this, but over the last couple of games, he's actually played a lot better, what you would kind of expect and hope to see at this point.
In a weird way, Patricia, like, is it, and it's I know it's counterintuitive, but like I for one, it's almost like, because I'm not the diehard Giants fan on this show. That's not my job. So I'd kind of lost sight of the fact that they've sort of turned it around these last 4 or 5 weeks without Saquon. And in a counterintuitive way, have they managed to improve, or has being without Saquon allowed them to evolve and be a little more creative and successful in, you know, trying to win football games?
Well, I think it's a case of when you have something that you've always relied on taken away from you, you're kind of forced to think outside the box. You know, look, let's not kid ourselves. Saquon is an amazing talent. I think he will be a Giant for quite some time. But if there's a silver lining to him not being in the lineup, and I know this is going to sound weird, but now they become a little less predictable in that, you know, defensive coordinators don't go in and say, oh, okay, we stopped Saquon, we stopped the Giants. Now it's like, okay, who do we have to stop? They have to try and think a little bit more. So there has been an advantage of that, but, you know, Saquon, still, he's a tremendous talent, he's done a lot of things, and, you know, like I said, I think he'll be part of this offense moving forward. But yeah, they kudos to Jason Garrett for finding ways to get others involved to make this offense a little less predictable.
And obviously Saquon Barkley is an unbelievable talent, and we understand that. But you have to tell me something here?
Well, I was going to ask Patricia.
Oh, go ahead.
Based off of what you just said, do you think maybe once Saquon's back, they'll still continue to look and mix things up, maybe go a little bit more by committee, maybe not have as much of a feature back offense?
I think it's possible. I certainly think it's possible. Which then raises the question, do you pay Saquon like a top running back? Look, I mean, Saquon can do a lot of things. I mean, you know, he can not only run the ball, but he's great out of the backfield. The one thing he still, you know, he was struggling with before he got hurt was his pass pro. But with that said, I think that's what Joe Judge always wanted to do. He always wanted an offense where you didn't hone in on one particular guy. You mix things up. So that's going to be an interesting thing to watch over the next several, you know, next year as well as the year after that, because Saquon, he can take over an offense all by himself. But like I said, you know, if you go back to the days when Odell was here, everybody kind of knew Odell was going to get the ball. Everybody knew Odell was the offense, and the offense became very one-dimensional and easy to defend. So, you know, is Judge going to say to himself, okay, you know what, look, we've been able to do all this without Saquon. You know, maybe we've changed things up, and instead of featuring him, maybe now we mix it up a little bit more than what we anticipated.
And I think that's, I think what you're seeing now is, I think it needs to be Daniel Jones's team. And I think that the now you look at and you realize why people say, you know, that pick of Saquon, you know, may not have been the right move for the Giants. And you know, you wonder, and I ask you this, Patricia, I know that you're close to the team, so, but I mean, if they were to package Saquon in a deal, and even Evan Engram, who I think has been a huge disappointment this year for the Giants, I mean, between his route running, his inability to catch big passes, and blocking, think about what they could bring into this organization with a young quarterback and a young team. With if you were to maybe package a deal with Saquon Barkley and Evan Engram to a team, do you think the Giants would think about that?
I don't think they would trade Evan Engram. I mean, Evan hasn't developed the way maybe we all thought he would in this offense based on what Jason Garrett did with tight ends back in Dallas. But Evan Engram, you know, it's interesting. You watch him on tape, and he allows them to do so many things. You know, they play a lot of 12 personnel, but yet when they line up, you'd swear you were watching 11 personnel with how they move him around like a chess piece. So I don't know that Engram necessarily would get moved. Barkley, I've actually dabbled in that thought, to be honest with you. You know, again, he's an awesome player. You know, I was very much on board when they took him. But having seen the success they've had without him, I wonder about that. Because, look, I would not pay this guy next year at any rate. I would not give him a new contract. I don't think the Giants will do that. They'll probably wait to see how healthy he's going to be. But, you know, if you want to pay a running back big bucks, you've got to have everything. You've got to have the running ability, the receiving ability, the pass pro ability. And I just don't know. I mean, Barkley, one of the things I said at the start of the season is they've got to not rely on him as heavily and come up with a solid committee. Otherwise, they're going to wear this kid out by the time he turns 25. This is two injuries in a row he's had now to his lower body, significant injuries. So I hope he comes back. I hope he's, you know, solid. But moving forward, I'd like to see it mixed up a little bit because I don't want it to become necessarily the Saquon Barkley show or the Evan Engram show or the Darius Slayton show. You got to keep people on their toes. And, you know, it's too tempting to lean on Saquon Barkley because of all the things he does so well.
Real quick, Golden Tate was doing his best Odell Beckham actually a couple of weeks ago where he was actually suspended, didn't go to the game against Washington. He came out this week and sounds like he understood what he did. What's going on with Golden Tate? Will we expect him to be a big player tomorrow?
Well, I don't know if he's going to play because he's injured. He's listed as questionable with a knee injury. So, but yeah, with Golden Tate, he finally kind of faced the music with the media. We got to talk to him yesterday. Very contrite. I didn't get the impression that he was just saying it to pay lip service. You know, when the whole thing happened, quite honestly, I thought to myself, oh, that's just Golden Tate because he's such an intense competitor. That's just him blowing off steam. But, you know, Joe Judge has made it crystal clear that he doesn't want any me-first people on this team. So, you know, Tate apologized. He answered all the questions. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't snobby or anything or defensive. And, you know, credit to him that he's able to say, look, I screwed up. I now understand. what I did was wrong, and let's move forward and be a team and continue working on what we've got going on here.
Patricia, you're the best. Thanks so much. We'll try again down the road.
Sounds good, guys.
All
take
right.
care.
Patricia Train, a New York Giant insider, joining us today. Listen, I mean, I think it'd be a brilliant move for the Giants to trade Saquon Barkley. I think you've got a good young running back in Wayne Gallman, who is very capable. You had the ability. They brought in Devontae Freeman, who is arguably one of the best running backs in the league, and now he's not now, but you can find those pieces to fill those holes. And the Giants have enough holes where a trade with Saquon, if healthy, could bring a lot back. And in terms of Evan Engram, you know, I understand what she's talking about in terms of what he brings to the table, but he doesn't block. And he drops more big passes than he catches. and I'm not trying to pick on this guy because I know he's a great talent.
He makes more than you can pick on him.
But for the guy that was picked in the first round and high in the first round by this organization, you expect him to be elite. I mean, be elite, make plays you have to make. He almost cost him the Washington game last week. He cost him the Philly game a couple weeks ago. He doesn't block well. I mean, he makes plays periodically. I wouldn't have a problem at all if the Giants said, we're going to package Engram, we're going to package Saquon, we're going to get picks or young players, fix this offensive line, and make this team, put this team where it needs to be, because they're close to being great.
I'm just going to jump in here. Like, the Saquon thing, it's poised on, like, it could go like three or four different ways, because he's a feature back talent, but he hasn't been durable. They could get stuff for him. They probably want to keep him. And like, also, he's a feature back guy that could take that load, but basically he's looking at missing two of the first three seasons played, which if you're thinking of getting rid of him, he also conceivably has 2 years of extra wear in the tank now that he wouldn't have had if they'd used him, you know, 400 touches or 400 downs a year. Like,
But I don't look at them using him. I mean, he got hurt early in the year last year. He got hurt early in the year this year. So it's not like this guy is, you know, it's not like there's a lot of wear and tear on him. He just had.
That's what I mean. Like, he has, like,
he's
everybody
picked
talks
up energy.
About
he's got more coming.
Running backs running out
you.
Of wear and tear around age 30. Like, we've seen it with Adrian Peterson, where, like, he had those big injuries, came back, and in missing those years, it almost extends his
very
career.
True.
Now, assuming the fifth-year option carries over if a player is traded, which I don't know for a fact whether or not that's the case, if you're selling 2 years of Saquon Barkley, you can get a lot for that going into next year. And if you're having success with, you know, Gallman as sort of your starter, and then by committee down the line with Devonta Freeman and guys like, you've even gotten some good touches from Deion Lewis in the pass game in third down situations.
Yeah, he's been. He's a third down back.
If you can play that by committee sort of game and get a lot for Saquon Barkley as a team that's trying to rebuild and put something around a quarterback, why wouldn't you?
This football team has the quarterback you need to win with. Now you just have to put pieces around him. And I think if you put pieces on the offensive line, get him guys that can catch the football, guys that can, you know, you protect him a little bit, this guy's going to get the job.
That's the thing. Do you think maybe something like Saquon to a team like the Falcons for Julio or something like that to try and get yourself receiver?
I want linemen that can protect Daniel Jones. You protect Daniel Jones, he is going to be elite. What he's doing now with the talent he has around him should show you what he is. And that's what people don't recognize that. And that's what I read the New York papers every Monday, and it's like, get off this kid. He's amazing.
You also have Alfred Morris. I forgot. You guys have a pretty good committee of running backs already. Like, it's not a bad backfield.
Not bad backfield if you're playing in 2006. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, yeah,
these
Morris
guys are
on
these
the
are
old
older
end.
Guys. But Wayne Gallman's a young guy. Anyway, we got to take a break. We're going to come back. Listen, I got to tell you, I want to talk AFC East with you guys. Because last week I had a prediction, and, you know, I said some potential. But this is a good division. And we're going to talk about it next. Don't go anywhere.
Bringing you another day closer to game day. It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
About the Patriots, Austin, as I'm sure as you were covering the girls' state championship, you had your earphones and listening to Sports Saturday. And I'm sure you were invested in that. I mean, I can't imagine.
Sorry to hurt your feelings, but I wasn't.
I'm shocked. Can't believe it. Anyway, well, then you missed out on great conversation. And guys, listen, feel free to join us today, 802-655-6672, or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line, the exact same number, 802-655-6672. Getting a lot of great texts
on
here right now. But I do want to get to the AFC East here. Last week, we talked about the Patriots and where they were and what they were facing going into Week 9. So let's just kind of reverse a week. So Week 9, we had the Buffalo Bills taking on, at the moment, at that point in time, we thought was the best team in football, the Seattle Seahawks in Buffalo. We had Miami, who the upstart Dolphins were going all the way out west to take on a team in Arizona that people thought might be one of the best teams in the league. They were playing great football. And we had the Patriots going on the road to play the Jets, and we felt like, okay, if things fall the way they potentially would fall, or where they used to fall, where Seattle would go in and beat Buffalo and Miami would lose on the road and the Patriots win, all of a sudden things get tighter. The games at the end of the year are going to mean something. Well, the AFC East yet last week, folks, Seattle goes into Buffalo and gets railroaded by the Bills. I mean, three, four weeks ago, I thought the Buffalo Bills were the best team in football. We talked about that. Never since then, I thought maybe that wasn't true, but they look like one of the best teams in football against Seattle. And more importantly than that, I think the bigger story was what Miami did going all the way out to Arizona and winning a shootout with the Arizona Cardinals. And more importantly than that, coming back in the fourth quarter and winning a football game on the road.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of shows you that these teams in the AFC East, I mean, it used to be a division that was the Patriots and everybody else. I mean, this is right now is a division to me that is special. And in this week, things don't change. I mean, the Bills have to play Arizona this week on the road. That's a tough matchup for them. And then Miami's at home, I think, against the Chargers, which, again, I think the Chargers are a really good football team. They're not indicative of their record.
Yep.
But you look at a conference, a division right now in the AFC that in the AFC East, that to me is one of the best in the league.
I'm very impressed with what Miami's done. I think they brought in a young, very intelligent coach, and they're letting him build from the ground up. They gave him all these picks. They've gave him all these assets to build on, and he's doing it.
I'm not sold on him yet, though. I'm not sold.
Brian Flores?
Are you talking about Miami? I thought you were talking about Buffalo.
No, Brian Flores.
Oh, Miami, I'm sold on. Oh, yeah. That football team. I'm sorry. I'll let you keep going. I thought you were talking about Buffalo. My apologies.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with what Miami's done. Buffalo has built something very strong, too. I don't know how I feel about the coaching, because they feel like they have been a very inconsistent team, and I think that often comes down to the coaching. But as far as their roster goes, they're very strong.
But I feel like they don't let the thing about what's going on with Josh Allen is I feel like there are times where Josh Allen isn't allowed to be Josh Allen. I think that's the biggest problem that I see.
Yes.
And in Buffalo, when you look at Miami, I love what they're doing. And the fact that the way they play football, the way they play fast defensively, I love the way they're using Tua. I love the fact that he went to Tua the way he did. I mean, it would have been very easy for him to stay with Fitzpatrick and just stay with the status quo until next season. I like the fact that he's done that. But now all of a sudden you look at a division in the AFC that I thought the Patriots still run up and make it, and it still might happen because I think the Patriots are better than people think as well.
They're better than their record, and at the same time, disappointingly, almost as good as their record too.
Yeah, but to me, I just think it's going to be more of an uphill battle for them because these two teams in Buffalo, Miami are for real.
I agree. I think am I on an island thinking the most surprising thing about the AFC East last week was Monday night, like the way that went with the Patriots and the being in a dogfight with the Jets. The Jets haven't won. They haven't looked good. Like they've been and remain the laughing stock of football, and it really took a long time for the Patriots to shake them.
They're not the old Patriots. This isn't your Patriots from 19 years. This is a different era here with New England, but they find a way to win, and I think it showed a lot to come back from 10 points late in the fourth quarter to win the football game.
I agree, having to come back against the Jets.
Yes.
Like, that statement shouldn't exist.
With that being said, it must be terrifying for Darnold that Joe Flacco looked so good in that offense against a secondary that's known for being relatively solid. And that has to be terrifying because that obviously brings up questions. Is Darnold the problem somehow? If Joe Flacco, who struggled in Denver and was given up on by the Ravens, can look good in that offense, and Sam Darnold was 0-8 in that offense, that is something he's going to have to, you know, face.
Yeah, if Sam Darnold might not be the problem, but he probably isn't the answer.
Jan from Underhill just texted, no mention of the Jets who remain perfect.
We're getting to him now.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I mean, if you're the Jets, I'm just, I'm, I mean it with all sincerity.
Perfectly mediocre.
I don't get mediocre. They're worse than mediocre. I don't know what's happened to the Jets.
Perfectly abysmal.
Last year at this time, people were looking at the Jets team and thinking this is a team that's going to be the next. They're in the same trajectory as Buffalo, as Miami, and in a matter of months they are now looking at a situation where I'm guessing they're tanking for Lawrence. I would imagine the quarterback from the Clemson Tigers. I don't know what's going on with the Jets. I don't get what's going on there, but. Obviously, the Jets are a little ways off.
It's interesting because they traded away Avery Williamson, and I felt like that was probably sort of a tanking move where you're dumping salary, getting stuff back. You're trying to, although I think they actually ended up losing money on that deal, but you're trying to get younger and get pieces for the future. But they actually have a couple of linebackers who played very, very well in that Patriots game, and I almost wonder if they maybe just see that as their future defensively. And if maybe they're trying to, but you got to figure out the quarterback position. Because if Joe Flacco looks better than Darnold, then he's not the answer at quarterback.
The only way you can win without a somewhat decent quarterback is to have an historically good defense.
Yeah.
We're talking the
Baltimore Ravens.
Baltimore Ravens.
2000.
And there was one other team I was thinking of too.
Tampa in the early 2000s.
Yes. So you look at those teams, unless you can do stuff on the defensive side of the ball that nobody can really come close to, you can't have a liability at quarterback.
And you wonder if Darnold right now would be a perfect trade partner, right? I mean, he'd be the perfect for the Jets to trade with somebody. I mean,
Who wants that, though?
Well, but because it just might be the situation. I mean, he's got a lot of potential. I mean,
Listen,
he was one of the highest-touted quarterbacks going in last
potential
year.
Potential evaporates by
I understand
the game.
That. I understand that, but in a situation where sometimes just changing a person, where the person is playing, can change the way they are, the Jets could get something back for that. And it may not be a big situation, but look at San Francisco with Garoppolo. I mean, yeah. Is that working? Maybe moving him to a situation where he's going to play under a Shanahan in San Francisco would be a better fit for San Francisco. Might be a better fit for the Jets if they were able to get draft picks or an offensive lineman or something for him. I still think he's got some value.
Wade in St. Almonds brings up another great point that Gase really seems like part of the problem too, and I think mm-hmm. he'll be out on Black Monday when the coaches start going. I think he'll be gone. To see them start fresh with a new coach and maybe a new quarterback and move Darnold for, a pick or something, some pieces maybe. They could become good in the next few years, assuming their organization doesn't shoot themselves in the foot. And if that is the case, you see Miami getting younger and better. You see the Bills are a complete team at this point. The Jets could build something if they take the right route. All of a sudden, the Patriots are in a much stronger division than they were 5 years ago.
For sure, but I think we still all those caveats you put in there for the Jets alone.
Yeah, because they shoot themselves in the foot a lot.
Assuming they don't do the wrong thing, well, you can kind of assume they won't do the right thing the way the last yeah. 10 years have gone.
Glenn from Moncton just put a tweet. Joined us on the Twitter and not the Twitter page.
Text line,
which you can join us as well, 802-655-6670. He said Ryan Leaf was highly touted, so it can happen. Ryan Leaf's a different mentality. He had a different mentality than I think Darnold does. I mean, I don't look at Ryan Leaf was a hothead coming out. There was a lot going on with him. I don't think this kid's a hot. I just think this kid's in a bad situation on a bad team. And if the coach is the issue, I think, and then maybe that's the issue. You bring a new coach and you bring in more offensive style coach, a guy that you think can motivate, can get this guy going in the right direction. But to me, I still think this guy's got some potential. I mean, forget that the first 2 years he played, I mean, people were talking about him as the next big thing.
I think part of his problem has been that in that offense, he's not really had the opportunity to have any pressure taken off him. I think he might sort of be at that point mentally where, you know when you're trying to do something and it's just not working, and eventually that mental block becomes the problem where you can't get past the idea that you keep failing.
I'm thinking of the line from Wedding Crashers, broken man, haunted past.
Yeah. So a change of scenery could save him on that front.
Tony from South Burlington just texted us. Says, do you think the rest of the AFC looks better because the Patriots look bad? Because they're not destroying, do you think the rest of the AFC looks better because the Patriots look bad because they're not getting destroyed by the Patriots right here? No!
In the case of,
are you kidding me?
They're playing other teams better than they have.
Miami and Buffalo are
Miami's
real.
Miami's been really good.
And I'm telling you right now, Buffalo is a Super Bowl contender. I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so this isn't just the Patriots stink are a little bit worse now and these teams are just getting a little bit. These are good football teams.
Buffalo needs to get out of their own way. Miami needs time and the Jets need a lot of things.
Well, the Jets right now are the team that is years. It looks like it's years away. But in the NFL, we know if you put the right leadership in play,
yep,
and you protect the quarterback, you can change it quickly. I mean, the dynamics here for Jets fans, just to make you feel a little bit better. I mean, you can go from terrible to great in a year. You can go from great to terrible in a year. There's so much parity in the NFL. If you just find the right mix, you can get yourself back there.
Yeah, I keep thinking how impressed I am with Buffalo. Like,
yeah,
they've overtaken the Patriots at the top, and not just in the standings, but like, I think on the field, what they're doing, they are just better than the Patriots.
Oh, no question.
Which that statement doesn't taste good coming out.
But I will say that if the Patriots can find a way to stay relevant towards the end of the season. You know, Derek Jeter said it best before 2004. You know, the ghost will show up eventually. You know, you put the Patriots in a position to make the Bills and the Dolphins feel like they're still relevant, they're still there, and they play them in big games late in the year. Give the Patriots the advantage there mentally. But I will tell you that the Bills and the Dolphins are real. And the Bills and the Dolphins, I mean, the Bills, I think, right now are a Super Bowl contender. And I think the Dolphins are a team that nobody wants to see in the playoffs. So the Patriots do have their work cut out for them. All right, quick break. When we come back, it's out in left field time, and this is a good one. Don't miss it. We'll be right back.
Because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
All right, Aaron. When the X-Files start to play their theme music, we usually have some weird stuff. What do you got today?
So this one is weird, and it's gross. Trigger warning it. If gross stuff bugs you, you might not want to listen.
Yeah, just, you know, you're not looking at a picture, though. You're just describing it.
Eel bursts out of flying heron's stomach, alien style.
Yikes.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yikes. So, in an amazing photo making the rounds, a snake eel blasts through the stomach of a heron flying over Delaware. The heron had apparently swallowed the serpent whole. Photographer Sam Davis told Live Science this week he thought at first that the eel had bitten the bird and clamped on, but after blowing up the photos, he saw an entirely different scenario. You could see the eel. You could see its eyes. It was actually coming out the other end. Davis saw the heron at one point descend to the water with the eel still aboard. The bird didn't seem to act much differently, Davis told Live Science. It was in the water and flying around. He took the photo in 2011, but recently shared it with a wildlife photo site, Live Science said. Snake eels have been known to attempt escape from a predatory fish's stomach by using the pointy tail tip at the end of its body to dig through, but they don't usually make it past the rib cage. So this one lucky guy. So that's a PSA for all animals out there. Do not attempt to eat snake eels whole because they will try to dig out of your stomach. And apparently they can do it.
I'm just going to tell you that it's funny you bring this up because a friend of mine actually posted this on her Facebook page this week and I read it. I read the same thing. Did you see the picture of it?
I'm a little shook right now.
It's pretty amazing. And you talk about the bird needs a Pepto-Bismol. You know, I mean, that's the thing about snakes and eels. That's why, like, if I go get sushi, you know, just the word eel sauce, or if I will not eat sushi that's made of eel because I just can't do it.
I like eel.
That's what I mean. Like, but looking at that, that's an eel.
Eels are so creepy.
There's no way I could eat it.
I let the eel get cooked first.
No way. I don't even know why I can't even deal with it being cooked.
I was going to say, this is one of those stories that makes me very happy. We are a species of animals that does not eat things alive.
But how about more importantly, the bird is no problem for the bird.
I know. He took it like a champ.
I mean, that bird is seriously, that bird is unbelievable.
It was still in flight in the pictures.
Yeah. And then there's another picture I saw of it where it was just perched and the thing was, you know, it was still there. You know, I'm assuming it, you know, you need to get rid of it. You got to pass it out. But my God.
It probably eventually died from infection or something. But the fact that at the first it was okay is pretty wild.
Story. As the alien reference goes, like the alien thing doesn't work out.
No.
No.
In those movies, it doesn't work out.
I mean, that's just, you know, listen, you got to, you got to make sure you know what you're eating. You know, some things don't agree with you.
I didn't think we were going chest burster today, but here we are.
Just going right, listen, God. But you know, you go on the other side, the eel, like, hey, never give up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Comeback story of the year.
Yeah, like there's that one thing where there's a bird got the frog in the mouth and the frog's got the bird's neck. You ever see that? Like, you know, never give up. Now we can have this snake eel is like, hey, listen, never give up. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Just keep fight on.
It's like
get yourself out of there.
It's like the mouse that stayed alive.
It's exactly like that. My friend snake that the mouse I tell you that every Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
The greatest upset in the history of the Super Bowl. All right. Sports update time.
Now, back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Good morning. It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. I am your host, Jeff Paul. My guy, Austin Danforth, award-winning Burlington Free Press sports writer, by the way.
Oh.
Looking dapper today. Joins us, is back. I mean, we're gone for a few weeks as you were covering all the insane craziness of the fall sports season in Vermont. And obviously, our good friend and our producer here, Aaron Wells. Great job on the sports update, my friend. And coming up with a really gross story about an eel jumping out of a bird's stomach.
So, have you ever seen moray eels? They are really creepy.
Those are weird. I actually saw one close up as I was snorkeling in Jamaica like 3 years ago, and there he was. You know, I shouldn't say close up because as soon as I saw anything that resembled anything that would snake or slither, I turned around and went to the boat.
You know what I mean? Scares me about them that also scares me about giant groupers? They're smart. They're smart animals, and they like...
What are you talking about? Giant grouper, like the fish?
Yeah.
What, you're afraid of a grouper?
Giant groupers.
There is nothing like blackened grouper sandwich.
Giant groupers have eaten adult sharks. They stalk humans, and they're smart enough to steal food from spearfishers.
Wow.
They are terrifying.
You know a lot about groupers.
Yeah, because they creep me out. They're like my snake.
Really, a grouper?
Groupers and sharks.
Well, you're in good shape around here because you're not going to see
groupers. Groupers and sharks are the reason that I will not get in the ocean.
Were we talking about doing some Masters update right now?
Yeah, let's do it right now. What do we got with the Masters?
Yeah, Tiger Woods finished his second round this morning.
5-under, right?
5-under. Also 5-under, Mickelson, Brooks Koepka.
Oh.
Rory McIlroy's a shot back at 4-under. The problem for all these guys, there is like, let's see.
Like 100 guys at 9-under?
10 guys at 8-under or better. 5 guys at 9-under, 5 guys at 8-under. There's a lot of guys that need to get leapfrogged for these to have a chance. The funniest news from the first couple of days, I thought, Bryson DeChambeau, after coming out and saying for him, Augusta National is more like a par 67 because the par fives are short.
He had a rough week.
So he made the cut.
Because before I left, he had hit his second shot. He looked like me. He hit a second shot like 60 yards over the green.
He made the cut on the number.
Was it one?
It was even.
Even. Okay, so that's why he made it.
So if par 67 for him, he was 3 over on the first day and 7 over on the second day, but he's actually only even for the tournament.
You see, one of my favorite players is Bryson DeChambeau because he is unbelievable off the tee, but his short game is as bad as mine. Literally.
I mean, maybe a little better.
A little. I mean, but when you're watching him, it's like, I feel good about myself.
His putter is just disgusting. Like, it's got this thick shaft, the extra thick, like, hyper baseball grip thing. It's everything about it is gross.
I love this guy. I love him. All right, we'll talk about that in a minute. But joining us now on the TikTok Jewelers guest line here on Sports Saturday is our good friend, head football coach of St. Johnsbury Academy, Rich Alercio. Coach, thanks for taking the time this morning, my friend.
Good morning. Appreciate you having me.
Well, we talked to you right before the season started, and at that point there was a lot of nervousness about obviously football was going to be different. We were talking about a 7v7 situation where we weren't tackling anymore, and now we've gone through a whole season. Give us your perspective on how it went.
Yeah, I think it was great. I think, you know, the nice thing is kids are so resilient, and, you know, it's so easy for them to adjust. You know, the thing I kept getting asked by everybody in our community is, how are our kids dealing with this? You know, they really didn't care. Once it became 7-on-7 and these were the rules of engagement, they just embraced that and started to play and compete. And we had a great time doing it. And, you know, we had a lot of success and our kids had a lot of fun. It was a good year.
You know, I talked last week about this as our fall sports season ended last week, obviously, with the championship weekends for everybody. And my soccer team at Colchester practice is right next to the football team on our practice field. And I noticed that the numbers look strong for Colchester. And Tom Perry and I talked about this over there. The numbers look strong and there was a lot of excitement around it. Do you feel that the players enjoyed it? And, you know, we'll talk about this. You know, we talked with you about, you know, the linemen not being able to do the things that they would normally do. Did the guys like that, guys in the eternal line and linebackers and players like that, guys that, you know, were looking to play normal football, did you find that they enjoyed their season as well?
Yeah, they did. And you know what? It really came down to, you know, I think how coaches presented it. I think if coaches were saying, oh, this is not good and it's a shame and stuff, I think kids, you know, probably picked up on that. You know, but we embraced what we were doing. for our linemen, unfortunately, we lost a lot of upperclassmen line. We had one guy decide to go early entry into college and take classes. We had another kid that couldn't come back because he was an international student. So we lost two senior linemen that way. We had a couple junior linemen that just decided, hey, you know, this isn't for me. I mean, I'm going to do something else, which I understand. We did keep all of our underclassmen linemen. So for the most part, our linemen were either sophomores, freshmen, or we had one junior. And then the other kids, the other seniors that we did have, we transitioned them to other positions. So we didn't consider them linemen anymore. We had a two-year starting guard that was a running back linebacker. And he was never addressed as a lineman again. We had a defensive tackle that was our tight end linebacker. The seniors, we just said, you guys aren't linemen anymore. Your line career may happen again in college, but you're not a lineman here anymore. So what we did with the one junior and the nine underclassmen is we had line practices. I was actually working with our offensive line 2 days a week, for upwards of 45 minutes at each practice, doing offensive line practices of techniques and schemes to get them ready for next year.
Rich, how did you see the game itself evolve over the season? I know from the sideline perspective I had, it seemed a little tentative at the start, but then the competitive juices sort of took over. And then after that, I think there was more of a rhythm and people got more of a sense of it.
Well, I'll tell you, the only thing I can speak of is for ourselves. And I would tell you what we did and what we did as a change, but it really, in order to use this year as a year to prepare our program for next year, and I think that was my biggest mistake, we were running what we would normally run. We were running coverage concepts for 11-on-11. We were running the plays that we use in 11-on-11, and a lot of them were play action, which is really nonsensical when you're playing 7-on-7. And it really wasn't until a little bit past the halfway point when we were in the games. We lost a game in overtime. We won a game that we had trailed the entire game. We put a 75-yard drive together, scored with less than a minute. And as a staff, we reevaluated and said, let's kind of gear up. We had a little break. We didn't have a game until the next weekend. And we said, let's start gearing more towards some of the just 7-on-7 stuff. So we changed the coverage concept that we use in pass down situation and made that our every down coverage concept. And then we did implement some stuff in our offense that you would never do in an 11-on-11 game. The kids picked up on it. They enjoyed it. And it really made for, our three playoff games really were quite lopsided when we really just started doing 7-on-7 stuff.
And one of the things I picked up on, I'm curious if there were certain elements of the game, the gameplay, the rules that you might have changed, because the one that stuck out to me right away was the 4 second pass clock. It seemed like there was 1 second. Like everybody could have used 1 second more to make the game a little more entertaining, to get a little more, ability to get downfield and open it, rather than like, oh, we just ran out of time, or oh, every pass is going to be 6 yards, just to add a little dynamism to the game. That was the one thing I thought. Just give, instead of 4 seconds, 5 seconds. Were there any other things like that that you either noticed or agreed with or thought could have been elements that could have improved the experience?
Well, I think the one thing I would say in following up on that one is I do think there needs to be a timer. I think the referee has to have a time, whether it's 4 seconds, 3 seconds, 5 seconds. Everybody's got to play with it. But there were times where, we're watching film the next day and we put a clock on it, and it's 5.2. And then we had a whistle blown on us at like 3.7. I'm like, wait a minute. So, I mean, really, it's not, it can't be that subjective. Time isn't subjective. So really, they should have a timer. You click a button, and then a little buzzer goes off, and you blow the whistle and call it dead. Because, it really shouldn't have happened the way it did. But I'll tell you what, trying to cover for 5 seconds would be a long time. I thought it was difficult at times to cover for 4 seconds. So we pass the ball a lot, and for us, we try to have everything off in 2.5, because quite honestly, it's tough to pass block for any longer than that. So the time didn't really impact us. 4 seconds is a luxury to sit back there and throw the ball. And fortunately, we didn't have too many what we called coverage sacks in 4 seconds this year.
We are talking to St. Johnsbury Academy football coach Richard Lercio as we tie a bow on the football season that was, and we was 7-on-7, and we had talked to Coach earlier before the season started to get his perspective, and now finishing it. I do, Rich, you were a college football coach. You know all about the recruiting end of things. How are colleges and universities, looking at your at Vermont athletes now after a year of 7v7? Are they looking at it with the understanding that they were doing something different and maybe liking the fact, say, you had an offensive guard that has the ability to run with the football and maybe play linebacker? I mean, how are you feeling that recruiters are looking at players now?
Yeah, I mean, so the few that I've talked to so far to be able to push out the guys that we have now and to prepare for our 2021 team that's coming up, they're happy that we had something. You know, in northern New England, there wasn't a lot of football being played. So anybody that's a recruiter in this area is happy that somebody that they're recruiting can have some film from this year. The other thing is it really did showcase athleticism, as you referenced. You know, so, you know, for that kid who was a two-year starter at offensive guard for us, that it was one of our leading receivers as a running back this year, it really showed his athleticism. The kid who was a defense, a tight end and linebacker, I played more tight end than linebacker. Shows some great athleticism in catching the ball. And then one of the other things, the follow-up that we talked about, is we had a 6'6 kid that came to the academy to play basketball, never had any expectation of playing football, decided with 7-on-7, I'm going to play. There's a kid that, I mean, he is extremely recruitable, so we're going to push his out at a higher level. I mean, a 6'6", 215-pound kid that's very athletic. I think it opened up some opportunities. And as long as, you know, I mean, I've seen guys get recruited off of videos before just because of height and weight. I think it doesn't do anything to negatively impact it. If anything, it enhances their opportunity.
What a story that would be if this kid of yours, a 6'6 kid, 215, decides he ends up being a big-time football player because of a situation with COVID where he was able to play 7v7. All right, before I let you go, I have to ask you, going forward now, if this was, you know, I mean, do you feel now, and let's just, I'm a half full guy, so my hope is that by next football season we're back to normal and you'll be doing your normal stuff again. Do you think that this experience has helped football's reputation in the state of Vermont and maybe the numbers will start to see go up again because of the situation?
Yeah, I do. I think, and again, like we talked about too, we got a basketball player. We actually had two girls join the team, and I talked to one of them, and she was doing our strength training workout the other day. She wants to stay with it. So I think, if anything, it increased numbers. I think some of these linemen that didn't play this year will want to come back again. If you can keep the kids that got attracted because it was 7-on-7 and bring back those kids that may not have participated because there wasn't any offensive or defensive line play, yeah, I think the numbers can increase. And I wish I could say that I'm optimistic that, you know, we're not doing this next year, but you know, certainly things aren't going in a positive manner for winter sports, you know, with already the Ivy League, and now I believe one other small college team is already, or small college conference has already canceled their winter sports. I mean, if we have to do this again another year, I think we have a good plan in place, but I would love to see us actually doing it, you know, the way the other sports in the fall did, where we can actually play in our division and maybe play for a championship again.
Yeah, I would love to see that too. Coach, thanks so much for the time. You're the best, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
Appreciate you having me. Enjoy your holidays.
All right, you too. St. Johnsbury Academy football coach Rich Alercio. Yeah. Great perspective there. And I think the last thing he said I think is important. If this does happen again and we're in a position where they have to play 7v7, it would be nice if they would have let them play their schedule, like just like we all did. I mean, my team traveled from Colchester to Burton for a semi, right, for a quarterfinal. You know, let them have their schedule and have their season if the possibility is there.
Yeah, and like what he was talking about with the kid that came in to play basketball.
What a story.
There were some cool stories like that throughout the year. I mean, yeah, we talked to Ron Fleming, the CVU coach, about guys notching all these firsts, as, you know, linemen catching balls, touchdowns, interceptions. I'd heard about a story. A kid from Middlebury was dating a girl from Otter Valley who played for the Otter Valley team, and they had to cover each other on the football field, which is probably the first time that's ever happened.
Right.
As we get to the end of the road here, I think that one of the reasons why the state opted to go in that way, which has been, you know, criticized a lot in the last couple months, is because a scenario we saw here just this week in New Hampshire, the Lebanon football team was on the verge of the semifinals in their division, but they had to cancel and forfeit their appearance because the team that they beat 30-6 in the quarterfinals had a kid test positive for COVID. And so this is a team that had a shout at a state championship that had to give it up because someone else from another town exposed them to it. And I would have felt awful having to cover that, write that story, if that was any team in Vermont, knowing, you know, what everything that that program would have put in to have it taken away by someone else where you don't even, you're not even, like, I think as far as that goes, I think that we did the right thing. And we got some cool stories out of it, too, as we've just talked.
All right, we got a caller on the line, Jan from Underhill. What's up, Jan? What's going on, buddy?
How we doing this morning? All right, before I get to my master's point, I've got to say, Jeff, you and I were at that Giants-Jets game last year.
Yes, we were.
Danny Dimes is Danny Turnovers. The guy can't keep the ball. And that's a historic problem. The guy doesn't improve if they keep turning the ball over.
He is improving, though. I think that's what you're missing is, yes, I understand the turnovers, but the turnovers are happening because his talent levels around him aren't great, and he's just trying to do too much. His kid's going to be a player, I'm telling you.
I love your rose-colored glasses.
Thank you.
And speaking of rose-colored glasses, I don't know if you saw Cindy Lyle's outfit. He's a 62-year-old guy, Scottish guy, at the Masters. If he showed up to Arrowhead Golf Course or Catamount Golf Course in Williston, you would probably be like, I don't know if this guy should be allowed to play in that outfit. He was going suspenders, like old-school suspenders.
Ooh, I got to look this up right now.
Yeah, it's important. It's important news.
And what's wrong with that? I think that's a great look. I love it.
I don't know about what's wrong with it. I think everything's right with it. I just don't know that it's appropriate for Augusta National. I mean, I would wear it, but that's me. And I'm kind of a degenerate.
He has a locker there, so I guess he gets to call those shots.
What are you changing the bottles while you're talking to us, Jan, or what's going on?
So I've been in line multitasking
or what?
For the last hour.
Did we lose him?
I'm doing bottle return, guys.
Oh, dude, look, Jan, double dipping here. This guy can do it all.
Yeah, it's important work. Somebody's got to do it.
Well, good luck with your cans, my man, and we'll talk to you again down the road. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. All right, take care.
I don't. This is the thing about like Jan, and I know we have to take a break, so I know we have to do this. But like, this thing about looking at Daniel Jones and looking at him, this is a real problem. Daniel Jones is the real deal. He's the real deal, and anyone that watches him, I don't know what. That's what I mean. I don't get the New York media. I don't get people saying, "I get the turnovers. I get it." But look what he's doing with the players he's playing with. This kid is going to be elite. I'm telling you, this is going to be one of the best quarterbacks when the Giants finally protect him. When the Giants get to where they need to get to, this is going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
It feels to me when I watch Daniel Jones like a lot of his interceptions, a lot of his turnovers are on plays where he's trying to make something happen.
Yeah.
Where he should probably just give up on the play. Veteran quarterbacks would know to give up on the play. But young quarterbacks on bad teams are trying to save the season.
And Brett Favre turned the ball over a lot. And I'm not saying he's Brett
Favre. Never stopped for him.
And, you know, Brett Favre is, I'm not saying he's Brett Favre, but this kid is smart. He's savvy. He can move in the pocket. He can run. This kid's the real deal, I'm telling you. So all you haters out there, I'm going to have the last laugh on this one. Maybe the only thing.
Okay.
You know, I'm just saying. All right, we'll be right back.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Like more this segment coming up, or watching Austin do this air drums before this with this song, just over there bouncing around with his drums. Look at him over there with his Oxford shirt on, getting it done.
Feels good. It's good to be back.
Oh God! All right, cue the music. Come on, my man.
Oh, wait. What? Yeah, there it is.
There it is. Now we know it's week 10. Now we know it's week 10. And I just want to say I've been red hot picking these games. Red hot.
I looked at this.
Red hot.
Scary.
It's good. So, listen, you looking to make some money this weekend? You know, you want to feel good about yourself? Pay attention to what I tell you, all right? All right, kiddo, let's get this done. Week 10 in the NFL, we're going to tell you the picks. Go ahead.
The Washington football team at the Detroit Lions. Wait.
Let's start again.
Hold the phone.
Welcome to Sports Saturday.
Yeah, these are all app, but they're all written as verse. I didn't write this. I copied it. So
gotcha.
This one's not my fault.
That's okay.
Although I should have checked it. It is my fault, I guess. Washington football team at Detroit Lions, -3.5.
Yeah, the Washington, obviously, tough loss to the Giants last week, and they lost their quarterback. A lot of compound fractures this year in the NFL. Have you noticed that? Just terrible injuries.
So those, like, heels bursting through the chest.
There have been more compound fractures, I think, than eels busting out of birds' chests lately.
Well, that's the same level same of, type gross of grossness. Out stuff
yeah,
for me.
Rough. All right, and they're playing. Listen, I think the Lions are a good football team, and I'll lay the three and take the Lions at home.
I'm taking the Lions too. 3.5. I don't think the Washington's getting within a field goal. I just don't see that happening.
I've also got the Lions. I just think they're a better team.
It's no fun. You know, I'll pick the same ones as me. I don't blame you, though. You're smart.
Houston Texans at Cleveland Browns -3.
Yeah, I'm surprised. It's a tough one, right? I guess I can see why. I'm going to take the Browns. I think they're playing good football. They are without Odell Beckham Jr., but they seem to be playing better without him. What a surprise there, huh? Yeah. So I'm going to take the Browns.
I'd circled the Browns, too. I'm there with you. I think that's comfy. I think they've been there's more to like with the Browns this year than I expected.
Yeah.
I didn't think they'd be at this point.
I'm going to take the Browns. Torn. No, I've got the Browns. I don't know what Houston is.
That's a great statement.
Yeah, I know Duke Johnson's questionable, or David Johnson's questionable.
What do you mean you don't know what Houston is? They're average. They're not a good football team.
Well, that's the thing about average football teams in the NFL. It's hard to know what they are.
No, they're average.
Some weeks they come out and lay with 35 points. Some weeks they don't. Some weeks they can't put up anything. I don't know what they are. I know Cleveland's good.
They're a 2-win team, and Cleveland's a 5-win team.
There you go.
Well, you can't always go on record, though. The Chargers are much better than their record.
Very good point.
Houston is not, so I've got Cleveland. Jacksonville Jaguars versus Green Bay Packers -13.5.
That's a lot of points, and if Gardner Minshew is playing, I would pick the Jags, but I'm going to take the Packers at home.
That's so many points. I took the Jags. That's a big I'm Jags.
I have the Packers, and here's why. You want to know how many times the Packers have scored less than 30 points this season?
Zero?
Twice.
Okay.
They've scored over 35, like, 4 times. I don't think Jacksonville can keep up. I don't think they can even really stay close to keeping up. So I've got Green Bay. Philly at New York Giants +3.
The Giants. I'm taking the Giants, especially getting 3 at home. I mean, I think the Giants are a better football team than their record is. I get it.
They are poised to lose by 1-2.
I'm telling you. This is a football team that's going to win tomorrow. I think Philadelphia's got some guys back, so they're going to be a different football team as well. But I'm convinced this Giant defense is different than Giant defenses the last couple years. I think Daniel Jones will put points on the Eagles defensively, and I think the Giants will win the football game.
I've drunk your Kool-Aid. I think it will be close. And that leaves the scenario where they can lose and I can still win, so I'll take them.
It's not just any players they're getting back. They're getting back 2 starting offensive linemen and their best receiver, and I think that's a game changer. They're also getting back one of their best running backs. That's a completely different offense. The Giants haven't had enough time to game plan for that against a division rival who has been weak this year because of injury. I don't think they'll survive. I don't think they stay within 3. Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus Carolina Panthers +5.5.
Boy, I like the Panthers in this game. I really do. And if the Bucs didn't get blown out last week,
isn't that a trap line then?
Yeah, that's what I'm taking the Bucs.
Oh, you flip-flopped. You went from...
No, what I'm saying is I really like the Panthers.
Okay.
I really like them. I do like them. I think they're a better football team than their record is as well. I love Bridgewater. I think this football team is galvanized, and I think they're a good football team. But if the Bucs, I think the Bucs are still elite, even though they didn't look it last week. I think they're going to put a game plan together that they're going to win. I'm going to take them.
Yeah.
I'm going to give the 5.5.
That line is goading you into thinking, oh, the Bucs are going to lose, but the Bucs could lose. I think the Bucs bounce back. I think you take them, you know, they can win by 6 or 7 pretty easy.
Can I ask you a question before we go on to Aaron Spick? Why do Patriot fans, I mean, I have some friends on social media that just dislike Tom Brady so much. It's not Tom Brady's fault he's not in New England anymore.
That's kind of his fault. He could have stayed.
He could have stayed it's not as if the Patriots were dying to sign him.
He didn't have to seem so happy to leave.
My feeling is he gave us 20 exceptional years. As a sports fan, I could not have asked for a better 20 years.
Agreed.
And so I will forgive him for being a little bit excited to leave my team. I understand Bill Belichick's system, not necessarily the most fun thing. And as you get older, you might want to start having some fun, enjoying your approach to retirement, playing in the Bruce Arians system. I get it.
The Patriots did not want to keep him. We got to do this not want to keep him. So to make it out like he just left the Patriots high and dry is wrong.
I agree. And... 2 years, $50 million each guaranteed, or $25 million each guaranteed, $50 million total. Can't really pass that up. Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus Carolina Panthers. I am going Panthers. Tampa looks disoriented right now, and Carolina looks like they are firing on all cylinders, and they've got Christian McCaffrey back. And with Christian McCaffrey back last week, they pushed one of the best teams in the AFC.
Yeah.
So I think they stay within 5.5 at least.
Okay.
I don't think McCaffrey's playing, though. I think
he was back last week.
He got hurt again? He got hurt again.
Well,
you want to change your pick?
They've still been very, very comfortable without him. Denver Broncos versus Las Vegas Raiders -4.5.
I'm going to take I like the Raiders. They're tough. They really are John Gruden's team, and I'm all in on the Raiders. I think the Broncos are better than we thought. I think it'll be competitive. I don't love that number, so I think it's going to be close. But I'm going to roll with the Raiders.
I circled the Raiders too, but I'm looking at this, and you can break it down. The Raiders are better away from Vegas than they are in Vegas. They are 4-1 on the road.
It's hard to get sleep in Vegas.
They are 1-2 at home. So they would need to buck that trend. They're a 5-win team. The Broncos haven't been impressive in any regard. I'm not giving them. No, it's Raiders for me.
I think Denver will be a very good team in a couple of years. I think Drew Lock has shown he's capable of slinging it when he's got the guys to throw to. I know he's got some guys on injury. I like their run game, and I like their defense. But none of that stuff's ready yet. And I think Las Vegas is pretty good right now. I think they'll roll. So I've got the Raiders. Buffalo Bills at Arizona Cardinals. This is a kind of a wild matchup.
This is tough, and I want to pick the Bills because I'm back on that Bills bandwagon. I'm rooting for those guys. But I think Arizona's real deal. And how about Kyler Murray?
Yeah, man.
Oh, my goodness.
I thought he made the wrong decision playing football. I really did. I thought this kid is not going to get it done in the NFL. This kid's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I'm going to take the Cardinals, lay the two. I think it's going to be a shootout, but I think if it is a shootout, I think Arizona has the better of it because I'm not sure the Buffalo Bills coaching staff will allow Josh Allen to do that. So I'm going to roll with the Cards.
I'm going Bills. I agree, but a team that good getting even a couple points, I'll take it.
Yeah, that's fair. I can see why. I mean, it's either or.
So I think the Bills might be overall the better team, but I think Arizona's very good at getting teams into a shootout. And they beat Seattle in a shootout. If you can beat Seattle in a shootout, Buffalo can't keep up with you. I think if Arizona gets to play their game, which they're going to try, and I think they'll succeed, I don't think Buffalo can keep up. So I've got the Cardinals. Chargers at Miami, -2.5.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Dolphins. I think this team is, I mean, what I saw last week told me a lot. I love the way Flores coaches his football team, and I think Tua is the real deal. I like the Dolphins at home against the Bolts.
Yeah, I got Dolphins too. I know they're giving points, but you're talking trying to get a Chargers team that's better than, as you guys have said, better than their record. Probably some snake bite in the equation at this point. Go across
snake the, eel bite.
That
maybe.
Too, yeah, that which we know hurts as much as anything. Going across the country
I'll
to
eat
beat
right
a good
you.
Team
bite right through you.
That's not a recipe I want to mess with. So, Dolphins for me.
I've got the Dolphins as well. I really like everything they're doing. I think the Chargers also have a bright future, but I think right now Miami's closer, and they're at home. They play very well in Miami. They always have. I've got the Dolphins. Cincinnati Bengals versus Pittsburgh Steelers. This one's pick'em because of some late injury changes and stuff. It's off the board,
and
so we're going pick'em.
I just looked at a line. It was Steelers -7.5 on one line.
So are we going to use that number?
Do you want to?
Yes.
That seems way more fair than pick'em.
Okay, yeah. So it's -7. Okay, then that's okay. I'm changing. I'm taking the Bengals.
I think last night might have been the night that the news came out the injuries.
I think it looked like Roethlisberger's going to play.
Okay, so now we've got a line, -7.5.
I'll take the number. I'll take 7. I'll take the Bengals. I think the Bengals are a better football team as well. This is a good – and Burrow's a really good quarterback. I'm going to take Cincinnati.
They've been trending, but I'm going to go Steelers. I'll take them given points.
I think Cincinnati also has a bright future. A lot of the teams we've talked about today, I think, have hope for the future. But Pittsburgh is beastly right now, and they're getting their quarterback back, and they're at home. Another team that's very good at home.
Beastly's pushing it a little bit. The way they're looking against Dallas last week. That quarterback was playing in the XFL about 3 months ago.
Hey, the NFL is an any given Sunday league. I still think Pittsburgh's a very, very, very good team right now, and they are at home. And that line is rough, but it's not, you know, the 13.5 that Green Bay is having to deal with. So I've got the Steelers as well. Seattle Seahawks versus Los Angeles Rams, -1.5.
So you talk about teams that you don't know who they are. See, that's what I feel about the Rams. Like, what are the Rams? I expect that football team to score. They look like they should score a lot of points. You expect them to score a lot of points. But a lot of times they don't score a lot of points, and that's why I'm going to take the Seahawks. They had a rough game last week out in Buffalo. I expect them to come back to the West Coast, and I think they're going to beat the Rams on the road.
This is another.
And they're getting number. They're getting 1.5 points.
This is another case like the Bills. You get a really good team getting points. That adds up to something. I'm behind the Seahawks here.
I have the Seahawks as well. I don't know what the Rams are. I don't feel like they know what they are. Jared Goff has not gotten where I think he was supposed to get.
No, he hasn't.
He had 1 year. He had that one big year.
And Seattle, I mean, their offense is incredible. Their defense has struggled. But against an offense that looks confused, that may not be, the end of the world for them. And their offense is so good, and they're getting points. I've got Seattle as well. San Francisco 49ers versus New Orleans Saints, -9.
Yeah, a lot of injuries for the 49ers. If the 49ers aren't a team that is a perfect example of what the NFL is, right? They're the team. Remember last year, this was this up-and-coming team. They're unbelievable. And this year, we see where they're at. I'm not sold on the Saints either, even though they looked great last week. But I'll take the Saints at home, and I'll lay the 9.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Saints.
Is Michael Thomas active this week? He keeps flip-flopping. Hold on. If Michael Thomas is active, I might feel a little bit differently, but don't forget, New Orleans has also been hampered by injury. They've had fewer injuries, but it almost seems like it's affected them more.
I don't know about that. The spanking they gave the Bucks last week, I'm on board.
And San Francisco's got injuries that are they're detrimental injuries. Quarterback, best defensive players, running backs, wide receivers. I mean, they're beat up. Their tight end, who's their all-everything. I mean, they're beat up.
You know what? I'm going with my initial pick. I've got the 49ers staying with a 9. I don't think they win, but I think they put up a fight.
Okay.
Baltimore Ravens versus New England Patriots +7.
I'm taking the Pats getting 7 at home with Bill Belichick, the coach. I'm just as how I'm doing it. I mean, I know Baltimore is good, but I think Baltimore is not the team that we saw last year to a point. I think they're scary on paper. I'm not sure it's the same football team. I'm going to take Bill Belichick getting 7 at home, take the Pats.
Yeah, it goes into my Sunday night, Monday night dog, home dog scenario. And we know that the Patriots have been playing good teams close and bad teams close. I expect another close one. Whether they can win, I don't know at this point. I don't feel great about laying my reputation on that, but giving them 7 points to play with, I'll take that.
New England is in Foxborough. They finally have at least one receiver we know. That's not very much, but it's better than the zero they've been playing with most of the season. Jacoby Myers has been phenomenal the last 2 weeks. I think he continues. Damian Harris is healthy again, and
he's looked nice.
He's been very good when he's been healthy. We've gotten good play out of Rex Burkhead the last few weeks. Cam Newton looks like he's getting better. This offense finally looks like it's less crap.
And this team's gonna go. It's gonna do what Cam does, guys. I mean, yeah. You know, and that's the thing. You just don't know what you're gonna get with Cam Newton
at home, looking less crappy, getting 7 points. I think they stay within 7, whether they win or not. So I also have the Patriots. Minnesota Vikings versus Chicago Bears +2.5.
Kirk Cousins and the Vikes, baby. Here they come. I'm taking them. Here come the Vikes. They're going to go on the road and beat the Bears. I'll take the 2.5.
The Bears. At home, getting points. Monday night, I'll go the Bears.
At home, getting points. Great defense. They've been able to figure it out. Nick Foles is a gamer. As much as that offense has been weird, they keep figuring it out. And with that defense, it's kind of hard to root against them, especially at home. So I've got the Bears.
All right, those are your picks for Week 10. You should listen to me and nobody else. I'm just saying.
He has had a good year.
Kind of. We'll be right back.
You better crank up that AC because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
We like this song so much, we thought we'd play it twice, Aaron.
I usually...
False start, 5-yard penalty?
Yeah, we're not having a good game today, man.
I usually fill breaks as the show's going, but this time I didn't look. and that break was very short.
I wish you all could have seen the panic in Aaron's face when he heard Nelly's beat start playing. Oh no. Is this happening? Wait, this is not happening. Hold on a minute.
I said some things that would
no,
get
I think,
us in
I think
trouble.
I think Austin and I just had it down pretty well, right? I think we hit everything.
You omitted one specific word that repeated itself.
I didn't even hear that one. I'm sorry. I didn't hear that one.
This is Hot or Not, and is brought to you by Superb Cupcakes in Williston. Stop by Superb Cupcakes. They are open for curbside pickup. They've got available flavors posted on their Facebook and Instagram pages every day. You can call them today at 802-871-5941 and place your order for contact-free pickup today.
I tell you how much we love Superb Cupcakes. We know how much we love. But let me just give you an example. Today, this is the type of cupcakes they have. This is just one of the crazy flavors. Today's cupcake of the day is pumpkin spice latte.
That sounds really good.
I mean, how do you come up with these things? It's a cupcake.
I can see where they come up with that. It is the
You can
season.
See where
it
you come up with it, but
season.
It's a pumpkin spice latte cupcake.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you get up in the morning and you think, you know what? I'm going to make a pumpkin spice latte cupcake. You got to have a great mind for that. So you have a great imagination. They do. As bakers, they have great minds.
I'm imagining like a cupcake, right? And it's obviously pumpkin spice in the cupcake, and then frostings like vanilla cream cheese frosting, something like that.
I don't know what's
happening.
I bet
that's really, really good.
I wonder if there's like latte inside, like maybe, a latte.
Maybe.
Oh man!
I mean, but see, aren't you intrigued to try it? Like that's what I'm saying. It's like an experience every time we go in. They have these amazing seasonal flavors all the time, and plus they have the ones you love, the chocolates, the vanillas. Mm. They have the number one cupcake.
I wonder
in
if
New
they
England.
Could do a savory cupcake.
Oh, now you're laying the gauntlet.
I bet they could.
I'd like to see where they go with that.
Maybe we'll throw that out to them.
Oh man, could you imagine that? We give them an idea, and then they could send us with some. You know, we buy some, bring them in, be like, we talked about this on the air, and then it happened. That'd be so great.
That would be so great.
That'd be so great. All right,
just don't make a snake eel one.
Please no. We all know what happens if you eat snake eel. The Celtics should not trade Gordon Hayward away.
Not if you get if your pieces you get back are important, I would do it. I mean, it just depends on what you get back in return for him. But I don't see that being a problem. He's had some injury issues, obviously. He's an aging player. They're a team that's close. I would do it if the package was right.
I would say I'm hot. Don't trade one of your two or three best players away when you're building to something. He's not that old, and he falls into the scenario of where his injuries have added to his shelf life. So, if he stays healthy, like, what he could have in the tank is more than he probably would have at this point. So, I think he's – what he does out there, too, is really valuable.
I'm going to go actually not as well, and my reasoning is I would love to see Gordon Hayward stay in a world where we didn't have issues off the bench and issues at the five. If we could get – there's been talk about maybe, like, a Miles Turner – for Gordon and a, you know, like a pick or something. I would love to have a guy like Miles Turner on the team so that Tice isn't the only guy we can trust at the five. And Tice gets a lot of foul calls and stuff too. Also, Gordon's kind of redundant. We have small forward depth and power forward depth more so than we do at the five. So I'm hot.
And I guess I would just say, you know, it depends on what the package is. I mean, it's kind of a hot take to say they should trade him, but at the end of the day, it's really what you're getting in return for him. If you're just getting if you're not getting enough back for him on a team that has a potential to win a championship, it's not the right move. But if you get the right package, I would do it.
Even if I have to send a pick with him because of the injury stuff, if I'm not getting a starter back, I think that changes my opinion some.
I would trade him for Austin Danforth.
Does that mean I get paid what he gets paid?
I have no idea, but I'm just saying, man, that's what I would do.
Oh, that's a raise from pretty much anything.
Yeah.
The Giants should trade away Saquon Barkley. This one we talked about a little bit, but I wanted to talk about it again because it was good.
Yeah, I say hot. I think it would be, I mean, I would. I think the Giants are in a position right now where there's some needs, and I think the Giants would benefit from that move if the package is right. Now, depending on what you get back from. Now, there are people out there with them. We got a bunch of Texans, and we talked about this earlier, that maybe they would get either get lower round picks or he wouldn't be worth as much now with the way the NFL is with running backs. But to me, he is a difference-making running back when healthy. You made a great point a little while when we talked about that he's going to have extra shelf life because he hasn't played in the last two seasons. Mm-hmm. I think the Giants are Daniel Jones's team. I don't think that I don't think the running back is going to be that important in this offense, and there's plenty of guys out there that can get the job done like you're seeing with the Giants. I think it would be great if they found somebody to trade with. I think it'd be a great move for the New York Giants.
I'm opening up to your guys' idea more. I think there probably is a team out there that would give you something. And knowing what you know about him, yes, the highs are high, but it's either he's doing what you hoped he would do, or he's not able to play.
Well, let me just ask you this too, because it's not about the highs are high, and I'd love him to be a Giant, but you can also see where a team would give up something back, something big right. back, because you add him to say a roster like pick a team. I mean, pick a team that needs it, that could use a running back that would put them over the top. And the top of head, I can't think of them, but if you put him on the Buffalo Bills, you know what I'm saying, or you put him on a Miami Dolphins team. You would get a lot back for him, and the Giants need that right now. And the Giants are close to being good. They really are.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it would enhance their chances to be better quicker if they move Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
So, Saquon is a very good back, but as a feature back, he has some problems, primarily that when he gets hurt, if he's your feature back, it throws your offense into a situation where they have to improvise a lot. He also struggles in pass protection, which on a team that has their young future quarterback and has had offensive line problems at times is not something you want. On the other side, you also have the fact that committee running back is a cheap position to fill. They already have a base for that. It fits their system better. And then you've got, if the fifth-year option carries, you're selling 2 years of Saquon Barkley on a rookie contract. Cheap star running backs are still valuable. It's expensive star running backs that have lost their value in the NFL.
Yeah, agreed. I you guys have turned me.
All right.
Yeah. Let's go. All right. Tiger will win the Masters.
I mean, I want it to happen, so I'm gonna say hot. I love when it, I'll tell you why I'm gonna say hot. I'm hoping, right? I mean, we're making a hot take here. It would be so much fun to watch Tiger make a move today and tomorrow. I mean, there is not, whether you like golf or not, if Tiger Woods is making a move on Sunday, and he's within a couple shots and making a move, I'm telling you, that's must-see television.
Hair-raising stuff.
It is. And I'll tell you, there was nothing. When did he win the? Was it
last year.
Last year when he won the Masters. Walking,
last year, which is like 10 years ago.
That's what it seems like. But walking down 18, and it won't be there like that this year, but that crowd that was behind him, that was just one of the most iconic pictures ever. Yeah. He picks his kid up at the end. I think it would be awesome. So hot. I mean, go get him, Tiger. I hope it happens.
My heart wants that too. But you look at the names and the number of names he has to get in front of.
I hear you.
And I've watched the last couple days. He's hit it well, put it in the right spots, given himself chances. And there, like, I can think of like 6 or 7 putts that he rolled well, read well, and they didn't break or didn't turn in for whatever reason. If he got half of those to drop.
Yeah, I agree.
He's right where he needs to be. And it's a shame because the 4-under round, the 68 he put together first round, was one of his 2 or 3 best first rounds ever in the Masters. It looks like the way the course is playing, it's playing a little easier, and he needed to be a little sharper, he needed to be 2 or 3 shots better than he was.
I mean, you're right. I mean, you're 100% right. But in terms of, it's just having him in contention on the last day of the Masters is special, and I hope it happens. But the name, you're absolutely, it's going to be hard for him.
He's even through 4 today. If he could get 4 or 5 under today, we're talking.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't, no. The dream defers.
Yeah, the dream defers.
I don't know much about golf.
That's okay.
So instead of going hot or not, I'm going to go, I hope he does, because I know it's good for the sports world to have Tiger Woods at the top.
Smart answer.
There you go.
The Jets should rehire Rex Ryan. This is the last one.
Not. I think there are better options out there, and that would look like that would look typical Jets to me if they brought in Rex Ryan right there, right? I mean, but I will say, the end wasn't great for Rex Ryan, but he brought a mentality to the Jets that I thought was pretty special, right? I mean, he made them relevant again, but no, he's not the right fit now. The Jets need a young guy that can come in and fix this thing.
I love the idea of the point, but I'm going to go not, because I don't like the idea of bringing in a coach who hasn't been coaching for the better part of 10 years.
Yep.
I think you're not sharp. I don't think you're in it.
Well, John Gruden.
He
was out for a long time.
He was a better coach than Rex Ryan.
That's true, but I mean, I mean, I don't think it's a great idea, but that's a good
idea. He was still breaking down film all the time.
Isn't Rex Ryan doing that now? Isn't he doing that now?
He just complains about Bill Belichick on TV.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
I'm going to go not. This Jets organization, they need to put their best foot forward. Rex Ryan's not a guy who can toe the line. He puts his foot in his mouth too much.
Mm-hmm. If I was the Jets, I would start with new. I would start with new uniforms if I was the Jets.
Were you waiting to do that all day with that?
Look at you. Can you not love anyone that laughs at their jokes as much as Aaron laughs at his jokes? I love it.
Callback to the Welker digs from a long time ago is so funny.
Oh God,
so good.
The Jets need to start with their uniforms. They got to get rid of those. Those uniforms are bad.
Yeah, I don't like them.
The helmets are bad.
Oh, they're not good. They need to go back to the Al Toon Jet.
I thought the early 2000s uniforms were horrible.
Those weren't good either. You got to go. Those were the Namath ones. You got to go back to the ones that Al Toon wore. Who's the who else played for them? Like Gastineau,
like with
Klecko.
The little plane on the side.
Yeah, those were good. And I'm not even a Jets fan. Those were good Jet uniforms. All right, that's Hot or Not, folks. We come right back here. We're going to tie a bow on this show. Thanks for listening. Don't go anywhere.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Good to have you back, Austin. We missed you here.
Good to be back.
I want to send a big thank you out to Giants insider Patricia Traina. She joined us early today to talk about the Giants' big game with the Eagles tomorrow, and the Giants, which will be a big win for the Giants. Just put that out there. The Giants get themselves relevant again in the NFC East. It'll be a fun afternoon for me on a Sunday. Haven't looked forward to a football game on a Sunday in 10 years.
I know.
And I am now.
I know my boy Alex Abrami he's traveling this week and out of market. And was concerned about how he was going to be able to watch the Giants game out of the market. So he was exploring his options.
That is rough, I'm telling you. Especially when it's I understand what he's going through because we haven't had a relevant game in many, many years. So
yep.
I also want to thank Rich Alercio, head football coach at St. Jay Academy. He's been a great proponent for 7v7 football for the state, I think, and he's very well spoken. And it was fun to get his perspective 2.5 months ago, and it's great to have his perspective today.
Yeah, and I like hearing how coaches think it went, how it evolved on the fly. I know different teams approached personnel and game planning differently. And like I know Middlebury, they worked on some pass patterns and schemes that, you know, were based on what the college does. Like they sort of powwowed and worked things out that way. And that seemed to work for them. So, yeah, and different teams having success. St. Jay won their region. Colchester won the Chittenden County region. Rutland beat Mount Anthony. Mount Anthony, first time they've been in the running for anything in football for a while. And then Windsor, D3, they won the Southeast, the Hartford region.
And a lot of fun seeing some of the matchups that you saw this season. Yeah. You saw schools that normally play each other. All right, today we had our Green City Garage poll question. You could have gone to 101.3 The Game at Twitter. The question today was, are you watching the Masters this weekend? Yes, no, or maybe. Aaron, what do we got, buddy?
63% said yes, 22.7% said maybe a little, and 13.6% said no.
You know, it's weird to me to have the Masters on in November, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But you know what? Because normally in April, the weather's nice. I don't want to be inside. But now I don't mind being inside watching it because it's gonna, you know, it's cold outside. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
It's almost like it's what the doctor ordered.
Exactly. All right, guys, listen, enjoy your weekend. Stay safe out there. We appreciate you listening. We are the other local sports show on this station, 101.3 The Game. We are Sports Saturday. For my man, Austin, my ace producer, the guy of the hour, Aaron Wells, myself, Jeff Paul, thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and go Big Blue. Beat those Eagles. Get ourselves back to tie in the NFC East. We'll talk to you next week.